Hey everyone, and welcome back to another issue of TSW Comics, where we take a look between the pages of Marvel's Star Wars comics. I'm one of your hosts, Tim, and joining me, as always, my dude, Rob Cast.
Hey!
Yeah, it's good morning! It's good to be back. This is very, very early here on the west coast of Canada. We're trying to scoot this in a little bit before family time kicks up and gets running, so it's about 6 a.m. my time. But
8 a.m. my time. It's a little more digestible on my end. But yeah, we both have wives and young daughters running around our house. So, hey, Sunday morning, let's get this done.
Exactly. But we clear that time out to talk Star Wars comics. You know, it's been a relatively light month in Star Wars comics. We've got some releases to talk about, but the news end it's been fairly thin. You know, it's been like that in the whole nerd world. But we're driving towards New York Comic Con here, which is October 4th through 7th, and we're hoping to get a lot of reveals there. But this episode, we're really going to focus in on what we're reading. We're going to talk a little bit about what we want out of Star Wars comics going forward and in the future. And then we're actually going to review the Beckett one-shot. Now, we've kicked around the one-shots a little bit, the movie tie-ins, and I'm excited to actually get to this because, spoiler alert, I actually kind of enjoyed it.
Cool. we'll get into that later. Yeah, no, it's a great read. Just right off the top, in case somebody has to jump out early. Yeah, but we'll get into our personal feelings about the book later in the show.
Yeah, we certainly will. Now, we always kick these issues off with talking about what we are reading. Now, Rob, you've got the extensive Star Wars pull list.
Yes.
Has it remained consistent? What are you reading? What are you enjoying?
Real quick, there's a couple things. The latest Star Wars had Han Solo on the cover, and he was in the X-Wing garb. Like, he had the orange suit on. So when you look at it from across the room and you see it on the shelf, it's like, oh, that's Han Solo climbing into an X-Wing. He never does. But I like the comics for. It gives you that, oh, they would never take the time to do that in a movie. But, it's, you know, an artist had fun with Han, and it's pretty cool. And, yes, he does fight alongside the X-Wings. And with the Star Wars proper title, they're hinting at Rogue Squadron.
That's been mentioned
a few times. So if I'm not going to give anything away. The Millennium Falcon had a little run-in with Vader and his TIE fighter. You know, the special one Vader had. What's it? Do you know the name of the one with the cropped...
No, TIE Striker. Someone's going to be real upset about that.
It's been known as Vader's TIE Fighter forever. So, but anyway, yeah, that's an issue previous, and then now we got Rogue's kind of a hint. They mention it, but it's really cool. So if you're into that, and if you're into the EU, like Rogue Squadron will sound very familiar to you. So it's cool that they're kind of integrating this into the comics.
Now, pausing on that title quickly, because I'm actually currently not reading it.
Okay.
They're inching a bit closer to Empire Strikes Back at this point,
they are
they not? Yeah.
Yes.
So that's going to be kind of exciting, because that's intrigued me a little bit about, okay, how are they going to tie into Empire? Now, Empire being my favorite Star Wars film, and this might be a reasonable place for me to jump back in. I'm thinking about doing the Marvel Unlimited, which does have some of the back catalog of the Star Wars books. So as far as catch up and point forward, I'm thinking, okay, if I can jump into the story right now and read into Empire Strikes Back, I find that a bit more appetizing at this point.
Absolutely, yeah. No, it's starting, and again, Star Wars is like most comic books, whether it be DC or Marvel. Everybody's guilty. They don't usually, the running through line, you already know that from the OT movies.
Yeah.
But in the middle stories, they have arcs. So there are jump in and jump off points.
Yeah.
So it's really easy to jump in if need be.
Yeah, I find that too, because the universe isn't enormous in Star Wars. And if you've seen the movies, and being that they try to keep relatively close to the consistency of characters that you see in the original trilogy movies, you're not jumping in and seeing something that's kind of wildly different. Yeah, you might get the odd villain that's a little different, the storylines. Yeah, you won't be able to pick it up maybe quite as quickly as if you're reading the whole time. But I find they're a little different than your kind of bulk standard Marvel or DC comics as far as continuity and jumping into them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but they're great stories. Again, there's some not so. They can't all be awesome, but if you're a huge Star Wars fan like we are, obviously, and if you're listening to a Star Wars specific podcast on Star Wars comics, then yeah, your business is probably right up your alley. So I really like it. It gives an extra depth to the universe. And it's a quick depth for those of us that, you know, we got young families. We don't have time to sit and crack open the latest novel. We try to listen to the new release novels in audiobook form in bits and snippets at the gym or in our car or, God forbid, at work. You know what I mean? So the comics are great little, like, they're almost like little snacks of EU.
Yeah, I love it.
Poe is wrapping up. Again, it's kind of sad because Poe, I've mentioned it before in the last 10 issues, is actually starting to get really good. And then now they're kind of trimming it and getting rid of it. So, but one thing I do have to comment on, Poe Annual number 2 just came out.
Yeah.
And the art, holy, like, normally I hate criticizing somebody's, especially an artist, on what their interpretation, but it's just decent story and lots of little Easter eggs in this, and what most annuals have, you'll notice they're full of Easter eggs, but the art, oh my, like Leia, they have Princess Leia in there and she looks like a potato. Like,
well, yeah, I saw that art floating around on YouTube here, or not YouTube, within the kind of the Twitter group. And I was thinking to myself, like, what are they doing? I don't understand having the art like that. Like, how does that get by an editor? Like,
yeah,
it's, you look at it, it doesn't even look like the character. Like, the first time I saw it, I said, wow, that hair looks Leia-esque.
Yes.
But the face and the features, so, like, jumping between this uncanny valley and this far extreme art, I don't like knocking art because it's all a personal interpretation of someone
of
doing something. Like, that's a style, and that's fine. But when you're pulling particularly from a film, like a known character likeness, it's hard to stray because, you know, you look at Aphra, like, there's only comic interpretation of this character.
Right.
And I find even in Marvel and DC and that, like, Bruce Wayne or Steve Rogers, that varies. But that's an interpretation of a character from an artist that doesn't exist, like a person that doesn't exist.
Right.
You're shooting for somewhat of a likeness. And this is so far skewed from that it's distracting more than anything.
Absolutely. And that's if like you were mentioning Aphra, if Aphra comes out in either in the animation or in a live action TV series or even making a cameo in one of the movies, we would have all of a sudden, okay, definitively, this is what she looks like.
Yeah.
Now the comics are roped into making it match, trying to match up as they can. And Poe's been, with the art, it's been, again, it's all opinion, but even when they started, remember it had a very, like, a pastel look to it?
Yes.
Very Western America's type, you mean, feel, a very earthy feel, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it was, some people didn't like it, but it's not because it was bad, they didn't like it because it didn't suit their taste.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where we're coming around. But this, it's a style, but it's just not, it's just not for me. So, but Poe's ending, would you get it in trade? You know what I think Poe would be great for was what you're mentioning. If you're looking to dig into the Marvel Unlimited,
yes,
digital, just grab, like, just even for the price of a year membership compared to the cost of the Poe trades for all, what is it, 30 issues they're going to end up, or 31 issues they're going to end on. There you go. It's paid for, and you get everything else. So
yeah, it's about, I think it's about $70 if you go for the top tier. I think somewhere between 50 and 70. It might be American, but so you're looking at a little bit more on the Canadian side of things. But yeah, you're right. You look at 5 trades to divide up that Poe series, or even chase them single issue.
Yeah, and they're minimum $20 here.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you can get them on sale sometimes, but even still, even if you get them $15, like, there you go. It's starting to make your way. It's worth its while. So that's, if I had a recommendation for Poe, it was good. It got really great at the end, just because it started tying in, like, we get a quick glimpses of, we talked about the POV from the Force Awakens.
Yeah,
and
that
then,
was really good.
Yeah. And then they're on the Falcon after The Last Jedi. Now, they're not giving you anything, but you see kind of seconds after they take off after the last scene of Last Jedi. So it's cool. It's very teasing and tantalizing.
Now, are you still reading the Last Jedi tie-ins? Because they just ended this past week, I believe. Or
they did.
Yes. So what do you think? What are your overall thoughts on the tie-ins? I saw some articles online that were saying Luke's death was better in the comics than it was on the screen.
Yes, it was. Because like with most... tie-ins and with the like the comic version of the movies is basically, you know, my recommendation again, maybe not Marvel Unlimited. Of course, you if you have it, read it. But movie comic adaptations of the movies are perfect for hardback trade.
Yeah.
You mean, and then you can put them on a shelf and they're really cool. So then you can just have the whole saga and all the tie-in movies and they're and they'll look great and you can pull them off the shelf anytime you want. I just finished Last Jedi number 6, the last one. And yeah, Luke's death was because you see him on the mountain and you see him kind of come back after his force projection with Kylo Ren. And he's looking off at the two suns and you give a couple – they have a couple – of inner dialogue,
nice.
You know, the thought, the, not yeah. thought bubble, but, you know, in the panels, they got the square boxes. It's he's not saying it, but yeah. he's thinking it. So that's really cool. And that's something that maybe is missing on the movie or maybe just people didn't get from the movie, but they really, they literally spell it out for you.
Yeah. Well, and that's where these dialogue boxes really work out. For yeah. these type of adaptations is that you get that extra step where in the movie, a voiceover of Luke Skywalker in that moment isn't appropriate.
No.
But in the comic book form, getting some of that inner thought, what he's experiencing, what he's going through as he's passing, yeah, it makes perfect sense. And it adds that extra layer of complexity, I think, to characters because you're able to experience that when you're reading it in a comic book form. So it gives yeah. you that extra layer. And that's almost some of the enticing aspects of the comic book adaptations is that, and you've said this before with all of them, is that you get just the next little bit, like a different perspective, that inner thought is what you're missing in the film. And you get that in comic book.
Yeah. And actually, you know what, just real quick, a real just quick spoiler warning. If you got your listening device, hit that 15-second fast forward twice and we'll get past it. It's Luke. He's sitting on the ridge and I'm just going to read this out here. Luke's staring off and it says, "And so it ends as it began. The light of two suns before stepping into a larger world." And then you see him vanish.
Oh, goosebumps, there you go. Man. I got goosebumps. I love that. You know, and
so
I
anybody
think...
that's... Sorry, I didn't want to spoil it for anybody, but yeah, that's, you know, it's cool.
Well, there's so much implied with those few sentences, right? We're all supposed to get that idea, that imagery of the two mm-hmm. suns setting, you know, the same way we saw it in A New Hope. Yeah. That's fun. That's presented. But this next sentence about before stepping into a much larger world or whatever exactly it was yeah. there, it's, okay, Force Ghost, you know, that ties in very nicely with what Obi-Wan had said in the past. Mm-hmm. So I love that little bit, but you're never going to get that. Like, that's all implied, I think, in the visual that we yeah. get. But maybe not so much with the Force Ghost stuff. That's an assumption we've all made and all leapt to, and we're going to see it, I think, for sure. Yeah. It's almost all but confirmed. But, yeah, man, that gave me goosebumps, you reading that.
Yeah, it's cool. It's so there you go. If for whatever reason, again, these comics are great. I know we're not going to jump into Vader too much.
No, we're going to save that for next month. But, yeah, let's hear what your thoughts on this recent arc here.
I love it. Last time we left him, he was picking out his own planet because yeah. the Emperor has given him a planet. And it wasn't lots of people thought that the Emperor sent Vader to Mustafar
yes.
as kind of keep him in the dark side. But no, that's not the case.
Yeah,
and how it's spun is pretty awesome. So yeah, I'll leave that way.
Exactly. I think we'll get into this next month where we're talking a bit more of the bulk because issue 21 just dropped for yeah. Vader. And we're starting to get into the meat of the Castle Vader arc, something that Charles Soule teased a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. We reviewed issue 19 last month, and we talked about how that started off. So it started off a bit slow, but issues 20 and 21, we're really starting to get in the meat of this arc. And yeah, spoiler alert here, 15 seconds if you don't want to hear this, but I found that really intriguing that Vader chose it and it wasn't given to him. It wasn't forced upon him, as we all kind of assumed.
Yeah, to keep him in the dark.
Exactly. So I'm even more intrigued now. Like, issue yep. 20 started off relatively slow, but by the end, you're like, yep. wow, big yep. things
and again,
are happening here.
Without spoiling, he's not flying around in his little TIE fighter.
No, exactly.
His choice of ships is mind-blowing. So, yes. again, we're hopefully, I mean, Marvel Comics hits us up because we're not going to spoil it, but we're going to tease a whole lot that makes it very, very tantalizing to read. So definitely check out Vader. They haven't even we've discussed this before, their Mon Calamari arc, I wasn't super high on, but it was still good.
Yeah.
So if that was, if that's the low bar, like, wow, like, we, I know we go on and on about it, but these are, this, these are fantastic.
Yeah. And love it. You get a general agreement. You know, I was talking to Kyle over at Tumbling Saber about this, this exact arc, this exact book a few days ago. And like, I said the same thing. He said it's the best comic book on the shelves right now. Maybe yep. one of the best that we've ever read. And
well, yeah. And I heard, was it, actually I heard, no, I heard another podcast. I think it was Geek History Lesson. They're, Jason Inman and Ashley Victoria Robinson. They're down in LA. I actually got a chance to meet them when I was down in San Diego.
Oh, very cool.
Great people. Very cool. And Jason has a whole lot of stuff. He's Mr. Comic. He knows everything and anything you'd want to know. And so does Ashley. And they were one of the recent episodes, they're talking about their favorite one single comics of all time, top five. And they didn't mention Vader, but when I was compiling my list in my head, that Vader, what was it, number four?
Yeah,
four or five is in there. Like, so this, and that's without exaggeration. And that competes against everything. Any Superman arc, any, you know, when Gwen Stacy dies in Spider-Man, spoilers, when Spider-Man confesses to Mary Jane of his dual identity, spoilers, The Dark Knight Rises. So that this is where this Vader arc is sitting. I mean, this is where this Vader line is sitting in. So yeah. This is,
oh, I agree.
I know it seems high, but that's, I'm not exaggerating. That's
because
what it is.
Like there's a exactly. reason that's a consistent feeling across most people I know reading this book, and a large part of Star Wars comic fandom is that mm-hmm. this book is some of the best stuff. And it all comes down to, you know, we said this before, but they've given Charles Soule the reins to do whatever, creative freedom. And that's yep. what I want to see a little bit more in Star Wars comics. Because one thing I wanted to talk about here, and I'm just going to actually pause and just go through my pull list here, but as lead into this, is just where we want Star Wars comics to go. And I think that's one of the key things, is a creator having freedom to run around in the timeline a little bit and pull from the different eras. Because this does a great job, this Vader book, at tying in the prequels while referencing the OT. You know, it has a lot of elements of connectivity between the wider universe while telling it's not a singular story because you need the Inquisitor stuff, but it's a rather focused story that does a lot of continuity building at the same time. You can see where, you know, even some of these one-shots where they pick up a character, as you said in the past, and they kind of drop him back down. They're not doing this Vader. They're rapidly expanding his history in canon. And it's unbelievable that they've given him the reign to do this. You could see a lot of this in a film. Like, if you're going to talk about bankable characters, you know, it's not a random group of characters like in Rogue One. It's not even Solo when you compare it to Vader. So this character is screaming for a film adaptation, but they're doing a lot of the stuff that you'd probably want to see in this comic book.
Yeah, you know, it's great. And so again, we can't recommend Vader anymore. And just real quick on my end, I pull everything pretty much Star Trek. They've had some decent Next Generation stories coming out. IDW's been putting those out. Nice. Those have been pretty cool. The Star Wars Adventures are still pretty cool. Again, a young read, but hey, if you got little ones, or that's a great, it's a great door to open them in. Kind of like, it's the equivalent of Forces of Destinies on YouTube, as you've seen. And what else? Of course, Fantastic Four. I'm still giving that a chance. I always, you know, hey, you got to give them five issues. Let them get the introductions out. Number two just dropped. And of course, The Watchmen. I know it's cool. Like, it's the Watchmen DC crossover is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of the original Watchmen, it's kind of like DC written in the style of Watchmen. So I'm going to leave it like that. So
cool.
Pretty cool. Check it out.
Yeah. As for me, it's been a fairly light month in Star Wars comics for me. I've just done the Vader series. I finished up Thrawn, which I really enjoyed. I like what they do with the character there. You know, it's adapting directly from the book, but I like this idea of adapting books as well as films. I think it's a unique way of providing an avenue for a different audience to consume those books. People that aren't into reading the books or listening to the 16 hours of audio, I think they should continue to do this. I'd like to see a Lost Stars adaptation or anything really from Claudia Gray. I would love to see even her take a stab at writing comic books. I think that'd be a nice avenue for her into this kind of bigger universe of writing comic books, like just to see what she does and how she adapts her own stories. That would be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And then this Beckett one-shot has really been my focus outside of Vader and some random Poe books and some random Star Wars books. But we're going to talk about this, but I have to say, like I said at the top here, I'm intrigued by this. And this is going to kind of lead us into our next discussion here about what Star Wars comics, or what we want for Star Wars comics in the future. Because, you know, in the past, we've really put the boots, or I have at least, to these one-shots, these movie tie-ins, because they're not doing a whole lot. They're just a $4.99 price tag. They've used the film to leverage a character, and they kind of tease you with, oh, we're going to expand the universe a little bit, and then there's not much done there. This story here, and this is what jumped this question off for me, this one I kind of like, this Beckett. You know, and we're going to go through it in a bit of detail here in a few minutes, but what I wanted to talk about a little bit here was, you know, where do you want Star Wars comics to go? Do you want it to stay focused in the OT? Do you want more of these tie-ins like we're getting with Beckett and using that as an avenue to explore characters like Rio, Val, Emphy's Nest? Do you want to stay a bit more in the prequel era, the new saga era? Or do you want original stories, Afro-like stories, where we're taking characters we've never met in the film, introducing them somewhere, maybe in the Vader book, and then spinning this character off? Because we're getting this big 30-issue maxi series coming here, starting in December. They're going to focus right on the prequel era. And we're going to see this span the entire saga. But outside of that, like, where do you want Star Wars comics to go?
Personally, again, I think I want Star Wars comics to educate us on things that we might need to know.
Yeah.
Let's just say we got a live action TV series coming. What's that about? Like, maybe when that comes a little closer and we know what it's about and we have a basic plot outline, let's give us some of that, like almost like they do with the lead-ins to the movies. Educate me on why is this planet important? Why is this character important? How does this tie into something? Give me something I don't know anything about Star Wars. You know, I love the little tie-ins. I love the little adding richness to the universe, but they're either do two ways. They either go with the Vader,
yeah,
where they're really enhancing that character, or they go with these one shots where they pick up the character, play with them, put them back, and there they stay. They don't. The Darth Maul was guilty, yeah, of that. Great story. It'd be a fantastic trade on your shelf, but again, it didn't further his character at all. You know. So no. Star Wars comics to be an avenue to educate us on what's coming, what to be prepared for. Give us, so let's say the Kanan comics. That picked up a character that was in an animated series, but it educated us on the character. It didn't just play with them and put them back. So that's what I want out of my Star Wars comics.
Yeah, for me, and I agree, I think that needs to be part of it, is going back and telling the backstories we're never going to see. So Kanan's a perfect example of that. Invader's another great one, is that they're going back and they're telling you, and they're leading you to a point. You understand where this character is in the future. Let's learn a bit about them in the past. And what the one-shots have been suffering from, the tie-ins at least, is that it's that exact thing that you said before. You know, you pick them up and put them back down. There's really no movement on the characters, no development. You know, for me, what I want to see a bit more, and this is a little bit about what they did with Poe, you know, not having read the whole series, but have kind of read in two different chunks, is that, you know, it's about expanding around that and expanding the universe around a single character. And that's where I think they can really leverage some of these characters like out of Solo. You know, we're likely not to see them pick up those characters anytime soon in the film universe. And maybe it's time where we get a Val or Rio story, or some sort of Emphy's Nest story, expanding around these standalone films. I'd like to see a little bit more backstory in Rogue One, like in that era. But
for sure.
It's exactly that. It's building up the continuity, but it's making things matter, I think, is the key. It's not about, you know, doing a single character running around in some circular story or circular arc, and then you're exactly where you were before. Let's have some reveals in these. Let's bring in some characters like Maul and maybe do a Maul-Kira type story.
Yes.
You know, expand on that a little bit, you know, this underworld of Star Wars, and leverage that tease, because I don't know where they're going to use that again. Is it a TV show? Maybe wherever. Like, that's what I want. I want them to take some risks with some characters, to push the limits of continuity and storytelling in this medium and really push the story element of individual characters and get us to a point where, like I said, things actually matter again. You know, I'm not reading the main Star Wars title because I felt like, again, that I'm okay with the character and what we've seen in that era. I want to see some different stuff. Like, the idea of original storytelling in the form of Aphra is intriguing to me, but I see how it would be very difficult for the average Star Wars fan to just try to jump into a random comic book about a random character they've introduced somewhere else. Like, Aphra's found that success, but she did spend quite a bit of time building character in the Vader arc.
Yeah.
So to do a more original storytelling, they need to leverage the movie characters. And I think I want a little bit more of that. You know, let's do something that's not Maul for a little bit. Maybe, you know, I said I want a Maul Kira story. Sure. If we get that, that'd be great. But I think it's time, for me at least, what I want to see is them expanding in the same sense that the books do.
Yes.
Is they have an element of the Star Wars universe planted in there, but they're telling rapidly different stories that maybe interweave with an event, Empire, or some familiar character or idea plot element. That's what I want a little more of. Let's expand the universe that way. Like, they've done it with Rebels. You know, they're going to do it with a live-action TV show. They've done it even with this new era of Star Wars. Use that sort of blueprint and expand from there. Yes, I get that they're limited in a sense for how quickly and what characters they can use, but I want a little bit more of that, a little bit more expansive storytelling and original storytelling, I think.
Well, that's just it. But and I'm quite sure that, like, Jon Favreau knows exactly what he's doing by now. Let's say, I mean, let's just live in a dream world and say, well, Emilia Clarke is going to be out of work soon after Game of Thrones. I'm sure she's all done rap shooting for that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know what it was, Ray Park. I know he might be into it. So let's, let's have a Maul, Kira stand, like a live action.
Yeah.
They have the budget for it. Why not? And then let's sprinkle in these comics to really just expand this universe. And again, educate me on what's going on, or tease me what's going on. If you're going to start with a new character, you have to do what Aphra did. They teased it in a very popular, great selling comic in the first Vader run. And then they jumped off and the first trade was outstanding. They didn't cheat, but they used stuff like her visiting Yavin 4.
Yes.
You mean they did a lot of things that whet the appetite of the Star Wars fan, which is perfect.
Exactly.
And then now Aphra is so good that we're willing to look past a one-off, one-shot story arc in a single issue or a bad issue. Not a bad issue, but something that doesn't entertain us as much as the previous. Because now Dr. Aphra comic has that clout.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they hit the ground running and they just did it right. They did it perfect. And that's how the bar was set low. We loved it. Lots of interesting Star Wars cookies, Easter eggs. And there we go. A brand new comic run. Very popular.
But it's okay to leverage stuff like Yavin and whatever. That's an intriguing part of it all. And I think that's what the books do really well, is that they leverage the little things to intrigue you, but then build their own universe.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I want more of, is that ability or that creative freedom. You know, I spoke with that about Charles Soule, is let an author run around in an era, write a consistent story like Charles Soule and tell something different. I think, Star Wars comics, for me, is at a bit of a pivot point here. I'm starting to see where they're giving the freedom and they're really focusing on a particular era and expanding even beyond that. You know, this Vader run is telling us that people really like, and given the creative freedom, people really enjoy the stories in between the films, the bigger spans between films. So like this Vader between Revenge of the Sith and basically Rogue One. Let's see something between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens.
Absolutely.
That's what kind of intrigues me, is that gap they can fill now as they're, peeling out the end of this storytelling with Episode 9 here.
Yeah, and also, too, I know there's a lot of complaints with people saying that, with all these little Easter eggs, it makes the universe or the galaxy far, far away seem small. But it's just for reference for the reader. Because,
exactly.
Yes, we know it's a galaxy. Same thing as, Avengers Infinity War. How many of Infinity Stones were on Earth?
Exactly.
I mean, and it, of course, yeah, it seems if you look at the size of the galaxy and where all these stones could possibly be, and how is it that Red Skull was protecting the Soul Stone? Like, yes, we get it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, but it's to make the universe feel like we can sit in it. That's what it's about, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No,
you know, that's what I mean. Like, it's so if you're complaining about Star Wars being small, well, you might want to look at everything else, including DC. You mean, especially like it just anyway. I'm not gonna get into a rant, but you know, it's to make the reader feel like they can jump in the story.
Yeah, and if any reader out there can tell me that they don't get excited when they see a little Easter egg or something,
yes.
Like you get that, and that excites you, and that's the point of it, is to make you feel comfortable in that universe. You can't spin out and do something, and that's why you never see that. You never see something just explode into existence, and you're like, well, how does, like, where's this tie in the timeline? Like, those are the first questions that people go to, is like, where's this planet? Like, where is it in reference to Yavin or Naboo or whatever? Like, people exactly. need a frame of reference.
Exactly, and that was my point, and I'm just making the point with the success of Infinity War.
Yes.
Like, when Red Skull came on, and he's the one protecting the Soul Stone, nobody went, oh, come on, a former Earthling,
yeah,
who happened to mess around with the Tesseract, with another Infinity Stone, happens to be protected. Like, nobody said that. It was like,
yeah, I near fell out of my seat.
Exactly. So just enjoy it,
exactly.
Please.
All right. Well, I think that's exactly what I get out of that, is that I think there's a lot of potential for Star Wars comics. And I think we're going to get that. You know, like I said, New York Comic Con's coming here October 4th through 7th. I'm expecting another series to be announced, at least an ongoing series of some sort, to take the place of Poe, to get some insight into what they're doing in 2019. Because that's really the last big Comic Con. Like, when you're looking at the kind of the big few, you know, we had San Diego, which you attended, and then New York Comic Con is the next big one. You know, Marvel's yeah. hometown. So expect something to come out of there. So I'm excited next month to talk and see what type of news, because there's not a whole lot going on outside of that, even in, like I said, the nerd world.
Yeah, and especially because, like you said, with New York being literally Marvel's home base, and in the comics, and in I'm sure corporate has a huge yes. spot there. Yeah. So New York Comic Con is almost like the season ending con.
Yes.
Because they call it con season for a reason. Now, granted, con season is creeping into like late February now, mm-hmm. when it used to start in June. But that's just because of the popularity of it. So yeah, New York is the finale of all these cons. And again, Marvel didn't have a huge presence in San Diego, so
no.
We got to expect something.
Yeah, and they've made a conscious effort to spread out these announcements across the con season, as you've said, because it drives people to them. It drives interest, and you know, why not get couple or three or four different major promotional pushes by fandom by announcing everything that you'd normally announce at, say, San Diego Comic-Con.
You got it.
All right, man. Well, let's jump into our review for this week. Now, this is Beckett, Star Wars Beckett, by Jerry Duggan. And this is a one-shot that ties, or supposed to tie, in to the Solo film. This takes place just before the Solo film, or at least that's my assumption, is that it's building some of the continuity around the character of Beckett, and I think it supplements a bit with Rio and Val. Now, this held a $4.99 price tag, and was a slightly larger book than you normally get with your, you know, normal Vader issue or whatever, so it was a bit of expanded storytelling. Now, generically, what this does is, you know, it goes through a heist with Tobias, Val, and Rio, and it takes you and walks you through kind of a day in the life of these outlaws. And then we get a nice little tie-in towards the end, I should say spoiler here, with Emphy's Nest, which I really enjoyed. But the interesting thing, what I want to talk about first before we get into kind of the character, is the structure of the comic book. It approached it in a more chapter sense, where there was three main chapters and it was one continuous story. But what they did here was each chapter was a different artist. Now, what did you think about this approach about the chapter 1 through 3 changing up artists while having a more or less continuous story across the board?
I liked it. It gives it's not such a change where it's jarring to
yes.
the reader. if you didn't say anything and somebody really wasn't paying attention, if they're doing a real quick read, you might not have noticed. Like at the end of the book, you'd be like, wait a second, that doesn't look like the first page. But yeah, I liked it. Like I thought it was great, especially with a one shot. Give as many people as you can a shot at, you mean, having their interpretation of these characters.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I when I got to chapter 2 in this, as I was reading it for the first time, because it says illustrated by at the bottom. And so I looked at it, I was like, okay, this is different artist. This is going to be jarring. Because I've seen it in the past where you go almost panel to panel and you're like, this is clearly two very different artists. What they've done here nicely, and I don't know if the first took a cue from wherever and then that was followed up by the other illustrators. But yeah, I didn't notice it. And I only noticed it because it explicitly said, this is a different artist. So yeah, I thought it was kind of a cool approach. Like the chapters thing, yeah, did you need it? Probably not. But I also like the chapter title pages. They're really well done too.
Yes. They're done in that old Western wanted help. I mean, wanted dead or alive poster kind of theme.
Yeah.
It's really kind of cool. And also too, the layout is pretty much the same throughout the book.
Yes.
So it's not like we're getting a completely different panel layout or completely different design. You're getting the same story, just different art, but with the same overall layout. It's not like, I'm sure everybody's, you know, or has seen it or has purchased Action Comics 1000, where they let everybody participate. They had, I mean, I don't know how many different stories they had, but they were different artists, different story, different writers, different, completely different layouts, completely different interpretations, completely different times or dimensions. Like it was had everything. So it wasn't like, it's not like this is one through story with different artists, but the same. In the same architect, if that makes any sense, like yeah. Same architecture.
Yeah, really well done, actually. Now, let's talk about the book itself. Let's start with the characters here. Beckett. What's your feeling for Beckett in this comic book? Well, let's start with how did you feel about the character in Solo, and then how did you feel about them picking him up here? And, you know, it could be anywhere between a year or a week before the film.
Well, I just had a rewatch. I got the digital
download
just 2 nights ago. So I was sat down and had a nice rewatch at home, which is completely different from rewatching in the theater. You know, and you have time to pause it. You have time to do whatever you want. Once you get past that, it's Woody Harrelson.
Yes.
As great as he is, it's just you because you know him so well, it's like, hey, what's that guy doing in Star Wars? You know,
it's a distracting character. Yeah, I agree.
It's a distracting actor. It just because of his fame. Now that I'm not taking anything away from the performance. It's just because we know him and we've known him for so long, you know. So I liked it in the movie. In the book, I really like how it mirrors Han.
Yes.
I like how it you get it. You can almost see where in the movie they've had more time than they had in between traveling to different worlds and going to different places and doing in the Solo movie. So you can really see the Han or him influencing Han,
mm-hmm.
because you see a lot of Han in him, and obviously Han didn't influence Beckett because they didn't even know each other in this one shot. So yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah, I agree. That's the first thing I said when I finished reading this was that character felt a lot like Han, which is an interesting approach because, you know, in the timeline or whatever, Beckett's supposed to be the one influencing Han to a degree. And, you know, this is kind of the inverse of that, where the character of Han, you know, in the future has influenced how they've written Beckett here. So it's kind of an interesting little circle that they've gone in here. But yeah, that's the first thing I got off this character was, wow, like everything from the dialogue to even how they illustrated his movements and him kind of being in and out of these crazy situations. Like that was the big one, right? Is that, yeah, he can get into any situation and find a way out. You know, that's the scoundrel in Han. Yeah. And that's what I like what they did here is that, you know, maybe that's leveraging too much on the character of Han, but for me, it made me appreciate a little more the character of Beckett and his influence on Han, even though it's a bit of a circle argument, you know, who influenced who. You know, the writing was influenced by Han, but the character influences Han himself. So
exactly.
I really liked the character in here. You know, I had a lot of fun with, you know, his interaction with Rio and Val as well, because those are two characters that we didn't spend almost zero time with. Now, I've only seen the movie once, and I'm looking forward to getting my steelbook here in a couple weeks. But I like Rio and Val as well, and the interaction, this kind of thing that they're doing where they have Beckett come in and he's kind of this big scary, like they're almost kind of leaning a bit on, and they even reference a little bit that he's some sort of, you know, witch or something like that, and everyone's running out and then they just steal everything. It's kind of a fun interaction, you know. It gave me a, you know, some nice interplay that I thought was maybe lacking a little bit in the film. It's nice to see it here.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. And that's the big, I like what they did with Beckett. But the big thing I get out of this book, you get more Val and especially more Rio.
Yeah, I love Rio.
Now the cool part is here we get a lot more Rio than we did in a movie, and we have that slightly tweaked Jon Favreau voice in our heads, like, oh, you got Wookiee?
Yeah,
you know, like,
exactly.
So he's, you know, so that's what, that's it, just enriches this book. And again, because of a great on-screen performance between all three of these actors. And now it's transferring in a book again with The Last Jedi. We got the DJ run one off.
Yeah.
That on-screen performance really challenged my reading of the DJ one off, because the character was verbally kind of had a lot of verbal crutches, as I do. I know, I'm aware, I'm doing a podcast and I hear my ums and ahs, but if I was writing a comic about, with Rob Cast in it, I wouldn't put the ums and ahs as they did with the DJ, but in the mirror of that, in this Beckett, that's where it was really cool. Whatever you got from them out of the movie was enriched in the comic, and it was enriched for the better when in the DJ went off, maybe not for the better.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. They are very, I'd say, characters that you can translate in a comic book form. Like, you know, it happens really well from screen to comic book. And especially Rio. Like, I have that Favreau voice in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every line, I read it with that voice, which is pretty cool. I really enjoyed doing that. Now, what did you think of the inclusion of Emphy's Nest here? Because, you know, she is on the front of the comic book. But as I'm reading this, I had totally forgotten about that. And then, boom, once we get to the third chapter, we see her inclusion here, and we start to see that relationship a bit more developed. You know, there's some implied relationship in the film, but this starts to expand on that. Did you think this was a good place to put Emphy's Nest in, kind of drop her in the third chapter here?
Absolutely, because in the movie, it's implied that there was prior run-ins.
Yes.
And what else? Where else better to put it than in a Beckett one-off? Like, it's perfect. It's what it needs. Because when you're reading these one-offs, you want to learn more about the characters, and you want more to do with them. Yes. Overall, for me, just real quick, they did pick them up, put them down, and didn't really move anything forward. But they enriched what you knew about the person. Unlike, again, like the DJ one-off, and also to the Cassian.
Yes.
And one off. They just picked them up, put them down, didn't do anything for them. I didn't learn anything else from them. But with this one, obviously they couldn't do much because it's literally right on the heels of the Solo movie. But that's a minor complaint compared to how decent the book is.
Yeah. Well, I fully agree. Yeah. Like, having Emphy's Nest in there makes perfect sense.
Yep.
That is the point where I was like, I want to see more of these characters now. I enjoyed the first two chapters and that you got a bit more of that character development or character interaction, I should say. And like you said, it enriches all three of those characters for me. And then boom, we spend one chapter here with Emphy's Nest. I'm like, oh, I want more of this. I want a bit of backstory on her and, you know, where their feud goes back to. So that's what got me going here. And, you know, it ends here with kind of a question mark and kind of puts you into the movie. But, and it even teases right after the comic book adaptation up for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm quite intrigued by all this. This felt, more so than any of the other tie-ins, this felt like Star Wars to me. And it's really using outside of, and this is what we're going about the visual cues and references, is yes, we were introduced to these characters in the film, but they're using things like Tutubes, or at least that same species. Yeah. There's a character that looks like Neonum in here. There's the stormtroopers towards the end. They're using familiar cues and they're developing these characters. You know, that's what they need to do a little more of, because for me, this is the best one-shot tie-in that I've read. It's the one I've had the most fun in. It's the one I've gotten the most out of. And it's probably going to be the first one that I recommend here on the podcast out of all the ones we've reviewed.
again, what do we have? We had the Cassian one. We had the
there's even the Storms of Crait. There's the DJ. You know, there's so there's been quite a few here, and I'd almost sworn one shots off because I was tired of being let down by them.
That's the weird part, because it's almost like the, oh yeah, the 3PO one, which was how he got the red arm. And that was cute. If anything, it was cute. I looked forward to Storms of Crait. We were so looking forward to that. Yeah. And then it was like, okay.
Was a bit of
and
a
then same thing, DJ. Oh, that's going to be cool. He's a really interesting character. No, same thing, Cassian. And I mean, it's like K2. It's like, what? Oh, this is going to be awesome. Again, no, but this one here, the Beckett, I'm like, do I want a Beckett? Apparently I did.
Well, that was my exact feeling. I guess I want more of these characters now.
Yeah, like, exactly.
That's how I felt at the end. And do we need a Beckett ongoing? Probably not. Do we need maybe a 5-issue miniseries that explores, maybe not just singularly focused on Beckett, but, you know, spends an issue on Rio's backstory, Val's backstory, an empty nest tie-in? That, to me, might be more successful. Even the Lando Double or Nothing, you know, I think they just dropped issue 4. I'm kind of thinking, okay, let's, you know, I want to see a little more now. Like, I get the character.
Yep.
And this is, you know, take an opportunity, these one-shots, to do a real one-shot, a Val one-shot, but have some through-going arc that ties them all together. But you're not necessarily telling the exact same story. Like, I don't want 5 issues of them going on and doing little heists here and there. Like, let's jump into some backstory here. And I kind of got a bit of that here, and that's what excites me about it.
Well, yeah, or even do something similar to what they did here with the 3 different artists. Have the 3 different characters in 3 different little stories, mini stories, and then kind of have them tie in. Like, we have lots of ideas. Easy for us to say, because we're not artists nor writers, so or professional anyway. So again, yeah, this is great. Again, I don't know if it's because the bar was low. I'm like, okay.
That might be it.
We talk about this with Aphra. Bar was low. We talk anything. That first Lando run, bar was low. Bar was way high for this next Lando run, and it's good. I guess it's all how you look at it going into it. So
yeah, it's some of its expectations, I think. But I think overall, to credit the writers or credit the artists here, I think this is a good one shot. And you know, as far as recommendations go, you know, for me, it's a recommend. Like, if you guys, you know, had listened to us in the past and stopped picking up the one shots, or if that was, you know, part of what you're doing as far as you're kind of trimmed down your pull list, this to me is worth the pull. You know, it does have a slightly higher cover price at $4.99 US, which is about $6 Canadian, but to me, what I got out of it, the enjoyment I got out of it, yeah, it's a recommend for me. How about for you, Rob?
Absolutely. Yeah. Again, they didn't – I talked about it – I teased it earlier in this episode about how they didn't move anybody forward, but they gave us a little bit – they enriched the character a little more. They actually did something with them. So, thumbs up for me too.
Yeah, and if you guys have an opinion on any of the comic books that we discussed here, including the Beckett – you can make sure to email us at talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com. We will get that, and we'll discuss it next time we record TSW Comics. Because for this episode, I think we're about done. You know, I'm looking forward to talking about New York Comic Con next month, jumping into the beef, the meat of this Vader arc. You know, as we get a bit further, you know, get issue 22, get about halfway through. I believe it's a 5 or 6 issue arc. So we'll be kind of leading towards the back end of that. And then always, man, I love coming back here and talking comics with you. It's always a blast.
Absolutely. It's really, really cool. And it's, again, don't take our opinions as don't etch them in stone. Yes, they're etched in digital stone, I suppose, if that means anything. But yeah, it's basically two guys that are really loving, that love comics and love the Star Wars universe. And it just makes sense for us to come here every month and talk about it, because you know what? We'd probably meet up on Skype and talk about it anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'd love to hear from you guys. And you know, Rob, you're doing lots on the internet right now. Rome Podcast is always killing it, but let everyone else know what you are doing and where they can find you on the internet.
All right. If you want to find me personally, I am at Robert MM Cast on Twitter. And of course, as you mentioned, the Roman Podcast is just a comedy kind of show once a week. It's pretty cool. If you're into that, check it out. It is explicit, and it's fun. You know, it's not, you're looking for a political opinions or anything like that. No, it's not. you're not going to learn anything. Well, if you do, well, yeah. we're not going to get into that. But anyway, it's a great time. I love doing it. So check out Roman and I. That episode drops every Wednesday. You can find it on anything, Spotify and Apple Podcasts, everywhere you want to go. Don't forget about the TSW Roundtable. We're in the middle of our retrospective. The next one coming up, which we got to schedule, is Empire Strikes Back. We just finished A New Hope. And if you look in this TSW feed and you go back and you find the New Hope retrospective, I had a really great time with the crew on there. I had Ben from the Skyhoppers. I had Adam from the Retro Inc. podcast. And I had JP. He's a VIP with TSW. And we had an awesome discussion. And if you want to hear someone talk about A New Hope, talk to Adam from Retro Inc. He's so elegant with his words. It is just he frames it so perfectly. So anyway, if you want, check out that, and it's a really good lesson.
Yeah, it's an absolute blast, and I can't wait to. I'm doing the Empire retrospective. I can't wait.
Yes,
to
you are. Yeah, we gotta. We'll figure that out. We'll schedule it. But yourself, the Nerd Room. You have lots going on. You're in hanging out with the Tumbling Saber Boys, and
yeah. So I also do another podcast called the Nerd Room. For those of you that listen to it, thank you. It drops every Thursday. We talk everything Star Wars, Marvel, and DC. So just rounding up some of the news, and then we focus in on something. You know, we got big Captain Marvel stuff happening right now. Big news in the DC Extended Universe with the potential departure of Henry Cavill. So we're going to be covering all that kind of stuff. And I believe this episode is going to drop on the same day as the Nerd Room does, at least this week. And then, you can grab everything that we do at thenerdroom.net as well as starscommonwealth.com. This episode here, TSW Comics, will also be posted there. And you can also find everything that's done at Talk Star Wars, the retrospective series, TSW Comics, and the main show run by Rob Wade and Brad. That will be on talkstar.co.uk. And this feed you're listening to right now, you know, you can find it anywhere. Like you said, Rob, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, yep. That you can find. Podcast. So make sure you tune in every Monday for the weekly TSW show, and then twice a month, every second Thursday, or the first and third Thursday for these monthly shows, the TSW Roundtable and TSW Comics. And you can find me on Twitter at TheNerdRM, just kind of hanging out with Star Wars Commonwealth and Star Wars fandom there. And then also, you know, I'm doing a little Marvel DC stuff as we go through things here. But for this month, for the TSW Comics, I'm Tim.
Yeah, I'm Rob.
And thank you very much for joining us. We will see you guys next month.